Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play dude.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah.
Oh, it's my favorite time of the week. Toy department time, everybody. Is this your favorite time of the week, Matt Kolsky?
Sure.
You could say no. You could be honest.
I mean, it's a good part of the week.
You do a lot of other things.
Yeah, I love this time of the week. How's that?
Yeah, that's enough. I didn't mean it as a needy thing. I was just checking in with you.
I haven't thought a lot about my favorite time of the week. I just sort of try to make it to the next moment at every given moment.
It's probably a good way to live.
I mean, you could look at it as a good way to live, or you could look at it as the only way I can survive. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah. Also, you have a wife and children, so they probably ought to be involved in your favorite time of the week.
Only one child I'm aware of, but yes.
Yeah, fair enough. We've got some interesting stuff to talk about this week, but I wanted to start in the comedy world, because we were kind of talking about this a little bit pre-show, and I feel like we might have a bit of difference of opinion on the new Bill Burr special.
I guess we might.
Which premiered last night on Netflix. Now, it's called Paper Tiger, and last week we talked about the new Dave Chappelle show, which I think we both were a little meh on. Fair to say?
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like talking to people, that's really been the minority reaction. Like, most people who have mentioned this special to me, the Dave Chappelle, that is, really seem to like it. And my sense of that is that I think your enjoyment of that special is really dependent on your tolerance for, you know, people are so uptight nowadays and I can't make any jokes comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Which seems to be a really, really prevalent thing in the comic world, and I bring that up because this Bill Burr special mines a lot of that territory. I don't know what it is about that topic, but it also seems like if you're doing that topic, it's like that's your opening, right? You're gonna do 30 minutes on it right at the top. All of that, I guess, sort of sounds like I didn't like the Bill Burr thing, and my initial reaction was 100%, oh God, we're going to talk about this again. But man, I really thought he was like really skillful and funny about it. Like, there were a lot of times he was saying stuff that I was like, yeah, I don't agree with that. But his delivery on it was really effing funny.
Hmm.
And I found my, and certainly more than the Chappelle Hour. Huh. But I'm guessing you felt differently about it.
Yeah, I did. I was disappointed overall. I think some of his stuff was funny. I don't think any of it was insightful. Did you feel like he said anything insightful? I think he was marginally funny while saying stuff that I found disappointing.
Hmm. Yeah, I actually did feel like he was insightful at times.
Like, what did he say that you found interesting from a, you know, thoughtfulness perspective?
Well, I thought a lot of the stuff about his wife and dealing with emotions.
Yeah, but that was later. I'm talking about in the 35 minutes of why won't of,
Yeah, and the problem is a lot of the specific jokes are leaving me now in terms of answering this question in the way that I think you want it answered.
Okay, but I guess what I'm saying is
I can say that there were actual moments where I was like, yeah, okay, that's an interesting take on that. You know what I mean? Or, oh, like, you know, again, a lot of, you know, I don't agree with a lot of that. I think there are a lot of times where, you know what, like, having to adjust your comedy is a small effing price to pay.
Yeah, why is there 10 minutes on basically how, I don't know, whatever. Like, I don't care about being personally insulted by it, but, like, is 10 minutes on how the concept of a male feminist is asinine? And I mean, let's call this what it is. He knows he can't say it, but he spent 10 minutes dancing around calling male feminists gay in the pejorative sense. That's what he did. But for what?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I didn't take that.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I think he was calling them wusses, which again, that's not the most insightful point.
No, I mean, he was not, but he was also saying it's disingenuous. Anyone who doesn't let me make whatever joke I want is disingenuous. Anyone who believes that rape culture is a problem is disingenuous. And, like, again, we've been over this in the past. If it was super funny, I'll laugh at that. Like, I'm not really a comedic prude. I just didn't think this was super funny. I really didn't.
Here's the thing. You know, when it boils down to it about this in general, and I think this really covers both of those things, it's like, yeah, I think it's correct. I think the idea that I have to agree with everything someone says, you know what I mean? Or, you know, or that I can't laugh at something that I think is, well, logically on its face, not right, and that I could break down and say, here's why you're wrong about this. But, you know, if you deliver a funny joke, can still be a funny joke. Like, yeah, I agree with that. But I don't know why this is now the platform for 30 minutes of comedy. You know what I mean? Like, everybody feels like they have to do this. And I think, frankly, you know, the male feminist bit equivalent of this is that comedians just feel personally attacked because there's, you know, they feel like, oh, God, there's less things I can joke about now. And so they all have to do their, you know, we're holding up a mirror to society bit.
Yeah, you know? But see, that's the thing is you're not. You're holding up a mirror in front of your own face and screaming at your own reflection. And I'm watching you like, really? This is what you thought this was your best hour? Your best hour was half complaining that...
Semically rhetorically, because I think I know what your answer is. But you didn't think he did that skillfully.
No, I don't think I even smiled for the first 30 minutes.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah, I thought a lot of those bits were much funnier than I think you did. Which
I mean, it was the same stuff. I've seen it a dozen times now. It was the same crap.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not allowed to make jokes about people getting raped? Oh, don't get me wrong. We shouldn't be jerking off in plants in front of people. But I remember when people weren't such wusses about getting jerked off of in front of. Like, all right.
I don't think that was the joke. I mean, he did do the jerking off the plants line, but I don't think that the rest of it, like, I don't think that was the point he made after that.
What point do you feel like he made? I mean, that's what I'm trying to ask you. Cause the
point that he made, and this is, I actually did think was funny when he went after that, you know, he went into the no means no thing. He's like, yes, no means no. But he's like, there's a certain version of no that doesn't mean no. And that's true. You know what I mean? And then the way he did that. And then it's like, well, if you read that in court, you know what I mean? Look, there certainly are times when, you know, people say no, but that's not really what they mean. And, you know, and like, that's a thing. Like,
how many times does that turn into a rape accusation?
Almost never.
Yeah.
But I don't like,
so that's,
you know what
that's
I mean?
The
like,
point here is this to me is disingenuous whining about how I'm not allowed to joke about things and about how it's so tough for men now. And he said six times, we've just gone so overcorrected in favor of women now. And that's not true. It's just not true. Right.
And here's the other problem with this line of thinking is that, you know, these comics, whether it's Chappelle or Burr or pretty much anyone who's good enough for you to be watching them on Netflix. You know, because Netflix is writing a giant check for most of these shows, right? Dude standing up halfway across the world at the Royal Albert Hall and it's packed. You know what I mean? And he's walking off going, this is the, you know, these are the greatest nights of my life. It seems like you're still pretty much allowed to be making these jokes because I just watched you do it. You know what I mean?
Yes, you're allowed to. They're just not as good as something that is original. And again, so, I want to be clear. I am not in any way saying that anything about this special is like something he shouldn't have done or isn't allowed to say or anything like that. He could say none of this was like he shouldn't say that. How dare? No, I've that reaction. I couldn't be farther from what I'm feeling. What I'm feeling is, what was the point of joking about things I've heard dozens of times before in an unoriginal way? That and look, Bill Burr and all the comedians are fair to say, I'm making jokes, I'm not sharing my opinion. But you sure present it like you're sharing your opinion. This is not like a story from your life that's not actually true, it's just designed to be funny. This is you attempting to make points in funny ways. And I think your points are bad, and I don't think it's funny enough to justify it. So like that's...
Did you know, I mean, I thought he did a pretty good job at times of really empathizing with women in a lot of the jokes, and maybe not as much in that particular section that we, you know, the plant section that we just talked about, but at lots of other times in the special, I thought.
He empathized with his wife, and he,
I think,
and he acknowledged that it was bad, but his main point seemed to be there's an overcorrection, and I think that's just on its face false, and he spent, in my view, 30 minutes complaining about the overcorrection to persecution of men. And I just don't get it, and I don't think it's funny. It's not. He's welcome to say it. I think he's wrong and not funny.
I'm in a weird place with this because I certainly agree with you on those points. I just thought it was funnier than you did.
Yeah, but I mean, and that's fine. But that's still a remarkable amount of time, percentage-wise, of this special dedicated to nothing other than complaints about not about the world, not making insightful points, but complaints that my job is too hard now as I stand at Royal Albert Hall making probably $100,000 and you know, shooting a Netflix special. Like, it's just, and it's the same thing with Chappelle, frankly. Like, and I actually thought the Chappelle special was funnier. Like, where Chappelle transgressed some of these lines, I thought he was funnier about it. And that might just be a taste issue for us. But
I think so. I don't expect to come out going, I thought this Bill Burr funny special was funnier than Chappelle. Like,
I know. All I'm saying is, in both cases, my disappointment stems from the fact that these guys seem more interested in doing comedy about how hard everyone is on their jokes, when in reality, no one has been particularly hard on either of those guys. And I think it's a bad use of time in your comedy set.
What I think this is, and it's not particularly, you know, you're not going to hear this in the comedy. I don't know, maybe it's not even that great an insight because you listen to any of the last few Simmons' podcasts, because he's all fired up about this Dave Chappelle thing.
Well, I have to tell you, before you say whatever it is about Chappelle, I'm running out of rope with Simmons, too. I'm not kidding. He is my favorite sports personality by far. I'm an acolyte. But I don't have the time, with all the podcasts I want to listen to, with all the stuff I want to take in, all the stuff I want to watch, I don't have the time to listen to Bill Simmons complain about kids. I don't. And it all, to me, I got to tell you, man, I turned 38 a little over a week ago. And I'm sure at some point in my life, I'll become the old guy who's more interested in complaining about the kids than trying to understand them. But I am just nowhere near that. Nowhere near it. And I look at these dudes who complain about no longer. I mean, even Bill Burr did 5 minutes on how dare a white woman tell me about white privilege. And like, I see the point.
I like that.
That may have gotten a smile, But also, like, it's not a very insightful point, and you're ignoring your male privilege, which is pretty much just as significant, if not more significant. And, like, are there white women sitting around drinking wine pretending they care? Yeah. But is it especially funny or original to point that out? No. And is it at all party to a point that, man, just like women are really getting over now? It's ridiculous.
Yeah, look, I like to, I think a lot of this honestly just comes down to delivery. I think I really like to deliver a lot of those jokes, and they made them more tolerable for me. But the point I was making in bringing up Simmons is that, you know, one, it's weird because he clearly has great affection for millennials and is surrounded by them all day long and seems to really like that for the most part. So this whole thing's a weird jaunt for him. But I really think it's mostly about social media. And, you know, his point, which is, you know, similar point of like, well, you're not allowed to criticize athletes anymore.
That's horseshit. It's not a point.
Right. Which is another variation on the I'm not allowed to make jokes anymore. It's just that I think that social media has now amplified the criticism enough for these people.
You know,
that
these people,
it's hurtful to them. And so they take that as, oh, I'm not allowed to do this anymore because I can now hear some of the complaints that always existed about my bullshit. You know what I mean?
And that, before honestly, I that. Like, I'm sure people can tell, it makes me angry.
Yeah.
It honestly makes me, like, I have a visceral reaction of anger to that take because it is so unbelievably self-centered.
Yeah, and that's exactly, I'm 100% with you on that.
To suggest over and over again that, man, you know, I used to not know that I was insulting and offending people all over the place, and now they tell me when I insult and offend them, and what, I'm supposed to care? Yeah, if you're a decent person, you're supposed to care. That's life. Yeah. And this idea of like, well, how come I can't just go back to insulting people and being disrespectful willy-nilly and not have anyone call me on it? Well, fuck you, bro.
Yeah.
Honestly, it makes me really angry.
We do radio and, you know, and this and whatever. And, you know, we're professional opinion givers and havers. We're content presenters. And, you know, I think when you do that for a while, hopefully you get an understanding that literally anything you put out there, there's a certain amount of people that are going to like it. And there are a certain amount of people that are going to not like it. You know what I mean? And that's just, it's just math, right? You know, like one of the things I say about the station when people complain is like, man, we got hundreds of thousands of listeners. They're going to be hundreds of thousands of opinions, and it'd be effing weird if they all lined up on one side.
And
so,
I've been having this argument with A's and Raider fans on Twitter this morning because our station doesn't cover those teams enough for the fans of those teams' taste. Well, the reason is when we cover those teams, the ratings fall through the floor because, broadly speaking, in our audience of thousands and thousands, far fewer people are interested in the Raiders and A's. And what happens is someone who's a diehard Raiders and A's fan, whose entire family loves the Raiders and A's, and whose friends also love the Raiders and A's, are like, what are you talking about? You're lying. Me and all my friends love the A's. Of course they have listeners.
And you're like, look here are the TV ratings.
Right.
Like, they're right there, you know
now,
what I
here's
mean?
The
like,
thing. In my view, what Bill Burr is doing is yelling at me because the market dictates a certain level of interest in certain things. And there is less interest today in offensive insults than there was 10 years ago. And there are more people willing to call you on being an asshole than there were 10 years ago, and more people with the tools to call you on being an asshole than there were 10 years ago. And Bill Burr is saying, how dare you? And to me, and maybe this is my problem, maybe there even was some funny delivery, but it's hard for me to get past it and enjoy it when I feel like you're yelling at me about the state of the world and blaming it on me. And then on top of that, your entire goal is to live a more unexamined life. I want to be able to live my life without thinking about how other people feel. Why do you keep making me think about how other people feel and how the things I say might make them feel? What the hell, guys? And I would say to you, you should have been thinking about the way things make other people feel for your entire life. And you're a broken, pathetic human if this is your best response to everyone feeling like they deserve respect. If your response to all humans want respect is, man, I'm really used to only respecting a few humans, and I don't want to waste my time respecting these other ones. Like, I just don't have a lot of time for you.
Yeah, that's it's fiery stuff, man.
And I don't, again, like, he's allowed to say it. It's just, I'm not going to watch it. And I have a feeling there's lots of people who don't want to watch it, and the people who do want to watch it, I suspect that if Bill Burr were to continue this angle in general, and comedians in general, comedians who continue to push this strategy of, man, everyone's so sensitive, desiring respect and not wanting to be insulted out of hand as just a regular course of daily behavior is a real sissy move. I think those comedians are going to end up doing comedy to a bunch of masshole douchebags. And God bless, well, if that's what you want your audience to be, a bunch of retrograde assholes, then keep heading down that road. That's fine, but I am sure I will find comedians who are capable of doing incredibly creative and funny comedy within the parameters of our world as it exists now.
Well, and I do want to raise that point, is that this does not seem to be a problem for younger comics.
No.
Right? Because they just get it. You know what I mean? Like, you're not going to see Hasan Minhaj or you know, Jabuki, you know, telling these kind of jokes.
No.
They don't need to. You know what I mean?
They are not. It's the same thing I say to people who try to defend, for instance,
Aziz,
and this is just in my head because
the age line. Aziz treads into this territory a little bit now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, he's but kind of honestly, I thought he was much cleverer about the way he talked about it, and I think it's because he actually had to deal with a pretty significant issue with his behavior. He seems like a guy who did self-reflection and thought about this in an interesting way. Bill Burr seems like a guy who saw Louis C.K.'s career go up in smoke and decided to complain about it.
It is interesting, too. That's the other thing that he and Chappelle have in common, right? They're CK buds.
Yeah. And I honestly
and
don't...
C.K. really referenced in both of these specials,
yeah.
Clearly. The Jerk... No, Plan is a failed Louis C.K. reference, I think.
Yes. And he kind of kills Louis C.K. for that, but then... backtracks and defends it a little bit, and I don't have time for it. I'm not interested in it. And yeah. Like you say,
the talk bits and the Elvis documentary bits are pretty great, though.
Look, Bill Burr is hilarious. Bill Burr is a really good comedian. That's why I'm disappointed. If this was Jeff Foxworthy, I'd have said, "Nah, not bad."
Yeah, I suspect that the market for the backlash is going to be greater and more profitable than you would like it to be.
Yeah,
that's that suspicion.
Yeah, you're probably right, but you know, time is undefeated, and we will eventually move through this stuff, and the majority of people with retrograde ideas will die. Thank God.
Thank God, time's undefeated.
Progress,
sorry, go ahead.
Progress continues. But I like the point I wanted to make about the young comedian thing you said is. Like, this, it's like when people, do you remember the Riley Cooper incident? He's caught screaming the N-word and threatening to basically start a race war at a country music concert. Nothing happened to his career.
Yeah.
But people would defend him.
Time was undefeated with Riley Cooper, though.
What?
Time was undefeated with Riley Cooper, though, too.
I know. I'm just saying. Let me get through this. The point is, people would say things like, well, there's video cameras everywhere. You wouldn't want to be recorded in your worst moment. Like, aren't you worried about what you might... Or when someone said something offensive on the air on the radio. You don't want this to be happening because you'll be next. I don't have the least bit of concern about that. Not worried about it in the slightest. You know why? Because I think about what I say, and I say what I mean. And I never mean nasty, offensive things. And if I accidentally say something that steps in one of those piles, I'm thoughtful about the way I reconsider it. And I don't try to pretend I did something different or lie about what happened. I try to understand. The people who are afraid of misstepping are the people who are constantly working to keep themselves from misstepping because they know the way they really feel is considered offensive or inappropriate by the general public. That's when you have to worry about these things. You're not constantly in danger of offending people if you don't constantly want to say and express offensive ideas. I don't ever have to worry about the N-word slipping out on the air because I don't say it.
Right. It's interesting because I feel like that same defense was trotted out for Mike Greenberg with a lot of people. Now, I think what Mike Greenberg said was just dumb and not offensive. This week about Antonio Brown, you know what I mean? It was just dumb. Ill-considered would be the answer and over the top. But it wasn't offensive.
It's only offensive in that he's supposed to be like a respected media member.
Yeah, I suppose that's – maybe that's fair.
His words were not offensive. They were just stupid and yeah.
Yeah. All right. Enough backlash comedy, please.
Yeah.
Begging you.
We spent too much time on this special.
What started this off is that Netflix has a new Chelsea Handler special next week. It's called Hello Privilege. It's Me, Chelsea, which I'm going to guess is going to trot on a lot of this ground. So, if you're working on one of these sets in the pipeline, maybe go another direction.
Yeah. And let me put it this way. If Chelsea Handler does 20 minutes about how she's real sick of black women complaining, I'm going to say the same thing. This is dumb and wrong and not funny.
Yeah, I'm going to not watch that. But I do feel like stand-up comedy, like we got a lot of people who are headed towards being the black leather jacket guy on Crashing. You know what I mean?
Yes, Dove. Yeah, exactly. That's who you are. And I found it ironic that when Bill Burr started doing the bit about his wife and was like, now, my wife's black, but I hate saying that because I don't want you to think I'm about to do some white-black comparison jokes. Man, I hate those jokes. They're so hacky. And I'm sitting there like, you opened your special with 30 minutes of hack on people being too hard on you. White people are like this and black people are like this is too trite for you. All right, cool.
All right, man.
And his complaint was because it's not true. His complaint was because I'll tell you, I've lived with a black woman and it's not true. And I'm sitting there like, oh, that reminds me a lot of the first half of this special.
All right. Well, clearly the second half of the special is the part, I guess, that we're going to recommend.
Yeah, look, I I'm sure there are plenty of people who are into that and do think that the world is too PC and do think that these are problems that need to be addressed by comedians. But like, Bill Burr seems to think he's speaking truth to power, and what he's actually doing is speaking power truth to a random collection of people.
That I agree with 100%. 100%. Yeah. All right. Let's switch gears to something a little bit lighter and fluffier, which would not be the Deuce. We'll cover that in a minute. But I want to talk about Late Night, which I watched late last night. It's weird. I feel like almost a little conflicted about it in that it's like, to me, I felt like this movie a lot the way I sort of feel about Mindy Kaling. You know what I mean? Where it's like it's almost like to me, like it's the, I feel like this movie is like the Impossible Burger of rom-coms. You know what I mean? Where it's like, it felt like a rom-com but there was not actually a romance in it, but it had that sort of manner and the beats and the tone and all that stuff. But instead it was made of vegetables. You know what I mean? Like the romance was almost like diversity or affirmative action was like the love interest in this. And all of that sounds like criticism, but I found it really mostly pretty charming and easy to watch.
That's you threw me for a loop there because I thought you were gonna not be into it.
That's the Mindy Kaling experience for me. Like, she rarely makes me like guffaw, and yet I find her pleasant and enjoyable most of the time. And like, you know, like I smile. I don't guffaw, but I kind of like smile. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think that's about right. I mean, this was not a movie that blew my mind or that at the end of it, I was like, man, I've never seen anything like that. Like it.
She's not going to do that, right? Like she's, right. That's not the swing that she's taking, right?
But,
she is like Jeff McNeil, man. Like she wants to hit 360 with, you know, some doubles and 12
home. I think that's worth making the point. There are doubles here.
Yeah.
It's a movie filled with doubles. I thought it was quite, I really liked it. You know what happened? It ended and I turned to my wife and I said, I really liked that.
Yeah.
And I think she actually liked it less than me. She was like, yeah, that's fine. But I just thought, man, this is funny. Not, you know, fall out of your chair, but funny. And it's reasonably clever and has a little bit to say. It ended and I was like, good times.
I wrote down pleasant to a fault, charming, pretty unrealistic, and pretty well executed all at the same time. And that's kind of like that's sort of the hodgepodge, which I would say for me is like, hey, I'm 80% in on this. You know what I mean? I like the cast is tremendous, and what a summer for Emma Thompson, right?
Yes,
like two pretty different, but really like spectacular roles that showed some really, I think, interesting depth from her. And I like her just kind of laying out, and she's great when she's mean to people. She's great when she lets down the veneer just slightly to let a little bit of vulnerability peek out. I don't know. Like, I feel like Emma Thompson's really kind of feeling herself right now, and I'm into it.
Yeah, she was really good. And I thought Mindy Kaling was good too. This is like a classic, you know, whatever, if it's out of five, like 3¾ star movie that I quite enjoyed, you know?
Yeah. Like, no, I would say that's right.
I don't know if it's even, it didn't even quite get to four because there's nothing remarkable or, oh my God, totally original. It's, you know, lightly feminist and mostly funny and well written by Mindy Kaling, mind you. Yeah, man, good stuff.
Do you think Reed Scott ever gets like just starts yelling about, can I get one script or I'm not just a total asshole?
I think I know who Reed Scott is. He's the like head monologue writer.
He's the head monologue writer. Probably best known as from Veep.
Right. He also was one of the leads on a very nothing sitcom that I super enjoyed called My Boys.
Oh yeah, we talked about My Boys on this show.
Have we? It's like, yeah, a light sitcom about you know, a guy's girl living in Chicagoland, and I just it's right up my, it's like it was made for me. But I'm a fan of Reed Scott, and he was kind of a D-bag, but also kind of a cool character.
Yeah, he's always he's a charming a-hole, and sometimes by the end he's reformed charming a-hole.
Yeah.
Sometimes he's just, that's his lane.
But he was pretty good. I like, everyone was good. It was a good movie. Not great, but good.
Really? I thought Lithgow, couple of heat checks from Lithgow off the bench in this one, which sort of enjoyed.
I'm saying everybody was good.
Yeah.
I just, the movie wasn't like spectacular in any way, but that's okay.
Oh, right? For sure. This it's weird because this was on Amazon, but it feels like one of those Netflix rom-coms that they've kind of almost cornered the market on, right? You know what I mean? Where you just need 90 minutes, maybe you got the wife over, maybe you got a little date over, something like that, and something you can watch together, and it's like pleasant and nice, and will make you chuckle or smile. You know what I mean? You can't ask for bang for your buck wise. It's gonna nail it, but I would put it right there with kind of Something Great or
Exactly. It's Hulu, but it's right in that sort of
To All the Boys I've Loved Before.
Yeah, the Netflix enjoyable rom-com zone. It's not really a rom-com. It's more of a career com, but it is that same sort of feel. It's not important, but it's super enjoyable, and everyone did a good job.
Yep. I really do think of it as rom-com, even though there's no romance. I mean, there's mild romance, but like I said, it felt like a rom-com where diversity was the romance, was the love interest.
That's so funny. You're right.
And Mindy Kaling, I guess more accurately, Emma Thompson made out with diversity by the end of it.
Yeah, so. She did.
Yeah, I think they had babes, Emma Thompson and diversity. All right. On to the Deuce, which is entering its final season.
A lot of final seasons going on this year, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like this is the right place, though, to end the show. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because from here, it's like the if we view this as the story of, like, sex in America, all the changes from, like, the mid-80s to now are technological.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, the change is a lot of it's technological then too,
Yeah,
it's always been cutting edge of technology.
Well, that technological change, sort of precipitated a philosophical changes and legal changes and stylistic changes. The technological, like the change in technology since the mid-80s is really just like how quickly can you access your tools for masturbation, and the answer is more and more quickly.
That also true. And then that in turn has an impact on the way these things are filmed and shot, which has an impact on the people making them, which is kind of the point of this story, I think.
Yes,
I'm just excited, because I feel like we're getting to that point. And obviously there's going to be less of that on this show because it's going to last not nearly as long as, say The Wire, where, sort of the impact of the novelistic style that David Simon employs really starts to pay dividends. You know what I mean? Like, when you were, watching Lawrence on a Stakeout, you understand the history of what he's seen in working Times Square and why this is different for him when the mobster guy's having a conversation about all the times he's bailed him out, you've seen those times. You know what I mean?
Yep.
You're seeing the evolution of these characters and what they've gone through. And so everything is sort of imbued with much more meaning. And I'm really looking forward to this series. The scenes with Maggie Gyllenhaal and her mother, and they're just having a conversation and seeming to be getting along, like, that carries extra weight in this series, that if they were having that conversation in season one, it would just be like, well, okay, this is a conversation. You know what I mean?
This is where David Simon utilizes his own skills better than anyone else. You got to get to about season three. And then his television art, his television art mimics reality in this incredible way because he pays attention to the characters he's building and he plays them true to life. And he utilizes the character development. There's the idea of show, don't tell in television. That to me is where David Simon succeeds the most, is he remembers everything he's shown. And so scenes that in this season, if it was the first season, would feel like we're being told things, are instead conversations with tons of unspoken content that we understand because of what has been established previously on the series. And I think that's what you're talking about with the way when Maggie Gyllenhaal's character talks to anybody, it's so loaded with all the stuff we know about all the characters. And even other really great television shows that do great character development, I don't think succeed as well in using the way they've developed their characters to convey things to us that are never directly addressed on screen.
Yeah, and the dialogue is just it's always so realistic. You know what I mean? Like, it feels, you know, like when we were talking about Dark Crystal last week, and I was complaining about the kids thing where, like, almost every line was exposition in some way. You know what I mean? And every character announced their motivations and intentions on the screen. Like, you know, obviously, you know, that's the difference between a kid show and adult show. But, like, at the same time, there's almost none of that in any of Simon's work, right? Like, these characters are always just kind of living in the moment. You know what I mean?
And you have to infer their motivations.
Yeah.
But you're able to if you paid attention. And that, I think that's also why David Simon shows can be tough to get into, because if you're not paying attention, it's like, why aren't they addressing any of the real issues here? But if you're locked in, no television creator pays off your investment more successfully and consistently than David Simon. If you invest in what he's actually talking about and focusing on, just a world of stuff opens up. It's remarkable. He's an unbelievable television creator.
Yeah. Agreed. I'm really excited for where the season is going
to
go.
Yeah, and I have to say too, you know, look, we're all aware of and somewhat focused on Maggie Gyllenhaal and James Franco, both of whom are fantastic. And I got to say, because we probably haven't mentioned it since season one, the job Franco has done establishing two totally different characters that he's playing, looking at exactly the same, that's just not easy to do. It's just not. And it's been so well done throughout this series. He's just excellent. And I think as great as Maggie Gyllenhaal and James Franco are, there are just some tour de forces from the you know, less front and center actors on this show. The woman who plays... I'm going to be terrible with names now, but the woman who, Laurie Madison, the woman who plays Laurie is excellent. Frank Sabatka, who plays the brother-in-law, just continues to knock it out of the park. Rudy comes in for a scene and is great. Like, it's such a good show.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. Frank Sabatka, by the way, is in a million things. And he's generally good, but, like, he's never as good as he is on these, like, Simon Pacano shows. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
it's totally different.
It's such a great match for him. You know what I mean?
Yep. A really good character actor who found a muse, it seems like.
Yeah. It's really interesting to see, you know what I mean, like, how different a place we are now, you know, from season one. You know, like, there aren't really any street pimps left in this story anymore. You know what I mean? I really enjoyed the show. I think this is going to be a great season. Are you a David Simon Twitter follower, by the way?
I'm not sure that I am.
I would recommend that for you. He's a pretty singular Twitter presence.
Okay. I can do that right now. Yeah. I can remedy that in mere moments. Yeah.
Not, he's out of the toy department a lot, but he's still David Simon, and it's great.
So, well, we just won't talk about his tweets on the show, but
probably won't cover a lot of his tweets on the show.
His Twitter handle is AO Despair.
Yep.
Good times. Let's have some fun.
He had some comments, and apologies for the not toy department of this story, about Baltimore, obviously, after the president made a few. And just the retweets of MAGA people tweeting him about, hey, have you ever seen The Wire? And his responses are just, it's a tour de force. That's all I'm going to say. You'll be entertained.
I'll check it out.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We should probably move on to Wu-Tang. What's the name of the actual Wu-Tang show?
I think it's like Wu-Tang, An American Story.
Wu-Tang, An American Story.
Hold on.
Yeah, you know what? Actually,
Yep, An American Saga.
Oh, yeah. Now, I only watched one of these. I don't know how many you got to.
I watched two.
Watched two. I feel like Wu-Tang, An American Saga fairly sums up a little bit of like the... This is a pretty like serious endeavor. You know what I mean? Like they're going for big TV, and I'm not sure it quite matches the ambition. Is sort of where I'm at with this after one episode. How did you feel?
I think that's not unreasonable, but also probably a little premature. I don't know. Certainly they're going for some level of peak TV. I mean. That, you know, of course. But I am interested in this story. I kind of wish we had actually watched the documentary like we meant to, so I knew how close to reality this is. But if it's anything like reality, it's fascinating. I'm very interested in the Wu-Tang Clan. I'm very interested in how the RZA became the RZA instead of Bobby Diggs. And... I mean, you know, after two episodes, it's not The Deuce or The Wire, but I find it both entertaining and interesting.
Yeah. I think, and probably a lot of it stems from this, is that I'm just probably maybe a little generally... I'm not uninterested in the Wu-Tang, obviously. I mean, they ain't nothing to fuck with. But I'm not as interested in the Wu-Tang, I think, as you are.
Yeah, that may be true.
And I think you're probably right that it might help to watch a documentary, but 4-part Wu-Tang documentary plus 12-part season one or 10-part season one or whatever, like that's a lot of Wu-Tang content for me.
Fair enough.
So I don't feel like after one episode that I might necessarily get the level of quality necessary to sustain that. You know what I mean? Like the effort reward there may be tough. For me,
yeah, that's fair.
But I don't think that there's not value here. You know what I mean? Like I do think that they made some decent television for sure. You know?
Yeah, yeah. I feel like, frankly, this is a better response than your pre-show anticipation might have led me to expect. Like, I feel like this show was better than you expected it to be, even though you didn't love it.
Yeah, I'd say that's fair. That's about where I landed.
Because when we talked about this, you were kind of like, okay. And it seems like you're like, you know what, one episode, not bad.
Yeah. Here's what I wish that the Wu-Tang doc had come out like maybe a year ago, and now we were getting into this. You know what I mean?
But did you watch the doc?
No, we didn't. I did not watch it up.
I find this complaint ironic. Too much Wu-Tang content, none of which I watched.
None of which. Well, that's because that's the thing. That's why I wish there was a little space. It gets intimidating. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, and if you had watched the documentary, this would make sense to me. But you haven't watched any Wu-Tang. This is the first Wu-Tang content you've watched.
Yeah, this is the beginning. I know, but I'm like, there's so much more. So now I got to go back and watch the documentary.
The quantity of Wu-Tang content is debilitating to you.
Yes, it gives me anxiety. Right.
Fair enough.
I haven't trashed any of the Wu-Tang content. I haven't said any of it's bad. It just seems like a lot to get through.
Look,
you know,
I'm familiar with anxiety. I I can understand.
There's a lot of stuff to watch.
Sure.
Right now. And like so many things. That's the thing. Is like, you know, we had a lot of Netflix and Amazon stuff. And so like, you know, when you go on to flip it all on, you know, you're immediately confronted with the, you know, continue watching Derek section of those sites. And you're like, oh, my God, there's so much stuff that I would like to finish. I haven't done yet. You know what I mean? You know, my a buddy of mine was suggesting like, hey, the Breaking Bad movie's coming out in a month. It's actually 1 month from today, by the way. You know, maybe it's worth to do a rewatch. And I was like, oh, that one might be. But like, I'm never going to be able to do a rewatch. So,
yeah,
you know, with all the stuff I got to see and blah, blah, blah. It's just, you know, I got that peak TV anxiety right now. Sorry, Wu-Tang.
Yeah, man. Look, I feel you. I feel you. There's not enough time for anything. I was thinking about that the other day. Someone was talking about, like, you know, the movie they'd seen more than any other. And I was thinking about the fact that during college, I watched Mallrats probably at least 200 times. Or some part.
Yeah, Clerks like that for me, I feel like.
Yeah.
Now that feels like that.
I'm never
like
doing that again.
Yeah,
never.
But back then you had that time. You
yeah,
could do it.
But never again in the future will I ever have time to watch something 200 times, with the exception of like whatever dumb thing my kid likes, you know.
Right. Yeah. No, yeah. Yeah. You're gonna see Frozen 200 times.
Boy, I have to tell you, one of the most. Well, luckily it won't be Frozen. It'll be whatever dumb thing comes out in 10 years. But.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd bet against Frozen. To be
yeah,
honest.
Fair. Frozen 2 by the time he's watching TV. But
try to get him on the Pixar, man.
I walked downstairs yesterday, and the nanny was playing Baby Shark from her phone and dancing with my child. And I immediately left the house in a huff.
Oh no.
Because, you know, I was like, I was like, at least I could avoid Baby Shark. Because, you know, there'll be some other dumb thing. But my kid's too young to care about Baby Shark. And I got to be honest with you, the nanny was playing it, and he was loving it. I mean, he's 4 months old, and he was just loving Baby Shark. And I saw my future, and I didn't love it.
Yeah, that's the thing. So I don't think there is any avoiding Baby Shark. I actually thought about that when we were watching the Travis Scott documentary last week.
Yeah. Even Travis Scott has to take his kids to see Baby Shark.
That's right. Travis Scott knows every freaking word to Baby Shark.
The
not
stars,
that
they're just like us. They're all forced to endure Baby Shark.
Yep. I guarantee you he's got a dance that goes with Baby Shark that he does.
Oh, for sure.
Yep. That's just what life is. By the way, have you heard that Post Malone Travis Scott Ozzy song dropped last week?
Man, you know, I try to be well-rounded, and I like to know what's up and what the kids are listening to, and I've already spent much of this podcast complaining about old people complaining about young people things. But I gotta be honest with you, I tried to listen to the Post Malone album on my Apple Music, and I got about halfway through the first song, skipped to the second song, and about 15 seconds after that I turned it off.
Fair enough. I can't speak for that album, but I like that song way more than I thought I was going to.
All right, I'll check the song out. It's just, you know, there's something I was thinking about it too. Like, why am I so quick to turn this off? I'll give things that stink a nice long chance all the time. And there's just something about it. I don't know what it is. It's like when I listen to Linkin Park. Like, I can't tell you why I think Linkin Park is a terrible band that sucks exactly. I have some thoughts, but it's mostly just that when I turn them on, I'm like, ugh, I can't believe I'm listening to this.
Yeah.
And
all
I
right,
feel the
enough.
Same way, not to speak ill of the dead, R.I.P. Chester Bennington, but like I feel the same way listening to Post Malone. Like, it's not that anything is especially bad. It's just like, I can't believe I'm listening to this. What am I getting out of this?
Yeah. I feel like I have a pretty good handle on why you think apart. Down off the podcast, if you'd like. All right, are we ready for homework? Do we have anything else you want to throw in there?
Geez, that it feels fast, but no, I think we've been doing this for almost an hour, and I think we covered everything we were supposed to, because you did not watch Good Talk with Anthony Jeselnik, and
I did not watch.
Ill-advisedly told you we should watch Bill Burr instead of Dennis Rodman because I had not enough time to finish the Rodman movie last night. I'm very excited, as we transition to homework, to watch the Dennis Rodman doc for next week. Very excited.
I did make the effort to watch Jeselnik. I just, the technology caught up with me and I wasn't able to access it. Apparently I didn't look at all the right spots. I do have it on the DVR already for next week. So we will definitely cover that, or great, this week, I should say. So we'll definitely cover that on the next show as well. In addition to the Rodman doc, which is also now residing on my DVR. You know what else is on my DVR, by the way? The Mule.
With Clint Eastwood?
Yes, which I am.
So your DVR is just recording things without you asking it to now?
No. I am excited to watch this solely thanks to John Mulaney. And if you've not seen John Mulaney, he did it on Saturday Night Live, but if you have not seen the John Mulaney bit about why he loves the Mule, I recommend that highly. I'm sure you can find it on YouTube somewhere. And now I cannot wait to watch this Clint Eastwood movie that seems to be insane and probably not very good. But I'm going to find 2 hours for that.
This was a while ago that they did this, though, right? This was like January.
Yeah. I just hadn't seen it after that bit came out. And I've wandered into it on HBO and I watched like 10 minutes and I'm like, oh my God, I get it all.
All right.
So yeah, that's on my DVR. That's not in our homework though. That's on the side. We're going to talk about, those two things, the Rodman and the Jeselnik, and then, Amazon, I believe, I'm sure I know that right, has a show called, Undone. Which is an animated show in, I believe, what it's called, the rotoscope style. It's the style that they used in the movie Waking Life, which is one of my favorites, and also A Scanner Darkly. Those two Richard Linklater movies where you've probably seen it. They kind of like draw over real people, so it's this weird. It's animated, but it looks very sort of realistic.
Yes.
The reviews are very good, so I'm excited to check that out, and then. We need to have a further discussion of the challenge. So,
yeah, we do. I'm so excited. Just as a preview, because we haven't seen, but this week's episode on the scenes for this week on last week's episode, we hear is TJ saying, "Are you kidding me, man? I hate cheaters." And boy, I don't know what's gonna happen, but I don't know that I've ever been this excited. I am more excited to see who cheats than I was for the Game of Thrones finale. And I don't know how TJ feels about cheaters because I've never seen it happen before. But if his feelings on quitters are any indication, this is going to be spectacular.
Yeah, the TJ just cheater shade, I think, is going to be amazing.
And because you know...
None of them want to let TJ down.
Exactly. For whatever reason, TJ's approval means everything to these morons. And I am so excited to see the looks on their faces when he crushes them. This is what the challenge is for, man. I'm fired up. It's peak challenge. Forget peak TV. This is peak challenge.
If you had the opportunity to just sort of be a fly on the wall of like a challenge, like wouldn't that be the thing that you'd want to like see most, is just the day-to-day interactions with TJ and the cast as to like, you know what I mean, like why this, because you know, if you watch like The Bachelor and James Harrison pops up, like they all are you know, they like him, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but this they're not like, he's not the king.
Yeah. But like they're not like, oh man, I can't let Chris Harrison down. You know what I mean? Like, these guys all revere TJ. It's amazing.
It really is great.
Yeah, so I cannot wait to see that. This season in general has still been a delight. So we'll jump into what's happening where and all that as well.
Yes, sir. And with any luck, like something else crazy in football will happen, and we'll have that to talk about.
I'm pretty sure something crazy in football will happen because that's just the way football seems to work these days.
It's football.
All right, let's get out of here.
All right, bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling, and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.